Welcome to The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis. I am your host, Cicely Davis.
I talked with somebody once who said, you know, if you just look at where the stars are in the sky, don't look at them as just random things. If you just look at them as points, look at the constellation, what does it show you? So you just outlined it, Roland. What does it show you?
What the hell was that? What the heck is she talking about? Is this the best the Democrats have to put up to run for president? Is this the best they have on the Democrat side of the aisle? What was that? What was that? I think she was trying to talk about crime, but what the heck was that? Okay, we're going to get into it. Welcome back, American Savages, to The Savage Truth. I'm your hostess with the American Mostest, starting your day out on a warm, unusually warm fall day here, almost 80 degrees, okay? And I'm starting you out today with some more of that bitter, nasty, and empty word salad from Comrade Kamala Harris. It's, like I said, it's unusually warm out here today. I'm really enjoying it. I know Rick is. I welcome you, and I thank you for joining me. Oh, the loyalists. I adore you. Thank you for joining me yet again. Couldn't do it, wouldn't want to do it without you. For those of you who are new to the channel, welcome. Come on back next time. Bring somebody with you. And I have an ask. It's always the same in the beginning and the end, and it's always this. Please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. So ecstatic to have you, new and old, as we get into this week's Haps. Now, we started out with some Kamala word salad. Now, at this point, we've all gotten used to it, okay? I think that it's safe to say that, woo-wee, Kamala is having a really bad week. She had a bad week last week. Now, I've got some audio for you all to listen some more in this episode today. In case you missed one or two of those references, I'm going to talk about today. This is it, folks. This is it, savages. From now until election, this is all I'm covering. We're going to be talking and covering this election as we are 2.5 weeks away from the most pivotal election in our lifetime. Last week was a rough one for Kamala Harris, as I said, and it's becoming increasingly clear that the Democrats are feeling the heat. They're feeling the crunch, right? They're starting to kind of scatter. While Trump was out there energizing his base and connecting with the voters at his all-women's town hall, which was a raging success, Harris, in contrast, like you heard in the beginning of the show, was stumbling through yet another series of missteps. Whether it was her inability to articulate a coherent response on pressure issues or the backlash from her own party regarding her policies, it's evident, clearly evident, that she is not only struggling to gain traction, but also losing the confidence of the American voter, the American electorate. The contrast and comparison, folks, you know I talk about it here. The contrast between Trump's robust engagement and Harris's lackluster performance is stark. While Trump's events are buzzing with enthusiasm and clear messaging, Harris seems to be stuck in a cycle of avoidance and deflection. It's no surprise, as a result, that many Democrats are starting to worry. As they watch her struggle, the cracks in their support are starting to widen. This isn't just a bad week. It's a symptom of a larger problem within the Democratic Party, one that they're trying to desperately ignore. Now, what's particularly telling is how Democrats seem to be reacting to Harris's struggles. Instead of rallying behind her, there is an eerie sense. Actually, there's an eerie silence from party leaders. It's as if they know that her presence on the ticket could be a liability rather than an assist. In an environment where enthusiasm is key, we need enthusiasm, we need personality, okay, we need talent, we need strategy, and we need real clear answers on policy. The Harris campaign is a significant red flag for Democrats. They can't afford to have their vice president be a liability when they're trying to hold on to the political swing for political swing voters. Now, meanwhile, in comparison, Trump continues to solidify his position as a leader who knows how to communicate effectively with a diverse array of voters. His ability to draw people in and address their concerns directly stands in sharp contrast to Harris's tendency to shy away from tough questions. Okay? Voters are looking for someone who will stand up and take charge, not someone who is constantly on the defensive. This distinction is crucial as we approach the final stages of this election. Now, as Harris falters, and she continues and will continue to do so in the next 2.5 weeks, it only heightens the sense of urgency within the Democratic Party. They know that their chances of holding on to key demographics are slipping away, and it's reflected in the polls. While Trump is gaining momentum, Harris's inability to resonate with voters leaves a void that the Democrats are struggling to fill. It's a precarious situation for them, folks, one that could lead to significant losses come Election Day in 2.5 weeks, I mind you. I'm going to keep reminding you. Listen to this, folks, because this is important. As Democrats will have you believe this lie, this big, huge lie, that abortion is highly ranked in concerns for women across this country. Now, please take note, this is coming from a left-wing blue New York Times poll. Just because, you know, I get accused all the time of being biased and only pulling from Republican conservative propaganda or biased results porting. So, okay, just so you know, I'm pulling this from a New York Times poll. So the New York Times Siena College, as taken from September 29th through October 6th, the most important issue for women in America is the economy, not women's health rights, right? Not women's health rights. It's the economy. You don't have to believe me. Just look it up. Okay, it's the New York Times Siena poll. And the economy is the number one issue for women all across the Americans, whether they're red, blue, or indifferent. The reason I'm telling this is because of Trump's recent all-women's town hall, a resounding success. Donald Trump's recent all-women's town hall was a resounding success, shattering the narrative that he cannot connect with female voters. It was a masterclass in connecting with voters who often feel overlooked by the political establishment. The event was packed, okay? Packed full of people, packed full of women. They were vibrant and full of enthusiastic supporters who resonated with his message. I must say, it's refreshing. It's so very refreshing to see a candidate who isn't afraid to engage directly with women, addressing their concerns head on instead of pandering to them with empty platitudes. The event showcased Trump's unique ability to resonate with a demographic that Democrats often take for granted, proving that he understands their issues better than his opponents do. Now, during the town hall, Trump highlighted key issues that matter to women head on, emphasizing policies that benefit working women and families. Economic empowerment was one, education and safety, tax cuts, and job creation. What he did well, and very specifically, and that's key, he was specific. He highlighted how his administration's economic strategies have empowered women in the workforce. The contrast between his approach and the Democrats' narrative was palpable. While they continue to push radical ideas that jeopardize economic stability, Trump stands firm in advocating for a thriving economy where women can excel in their careers and provide for their families at the same time. You can have it all, okay? You can have it all on a Republican ticket. You can have it all, ladies. While Democrats are busy promoting radical policies that threaten job security and family values, Trump is focused on creating opportunities for women to thrive in the workforce. His message is clear, clear as water. Empowering women means fostering an environment where they can succeed, not drown them in regulation and high taxes that stifle growth. Okay, he's nothing like the governor here, right? Pushing tampons in the male's bathroom. okay, allowing men in women's locker rooms, okay? That's not going on in the Trump campaign. What stood out most was the genuine connection, okay? That's what stood out to me, his genuine connection he fostered with the audience, his candidness. He spoke directly about challenges women face today, from skyrocketing inflation to concerns about safety in their communities. Unlike the typical politician who dances around the issues, okay, Trump tackled them with honesty and straightforwardness. This genuine approach, which I love, resonates with women who are tired of the political rhetoric and just wanted solutions that actually work for them and their families. Trump listened. He actually listened, folks, to those women's concerns and to the women of the present, responding thoughtfully and showing that the values that they have, that he was actually listening and responding. This level of engagement is crucial. It's more about, it's more than just talking at voters, right? He's not talking at them. He was talking to them. It's about listening and collaboration. This is a stark departure from the aloofness that often characterizes politicians on the left, who seem disconnected from the realities women often face on a daily basis. Now, it's important to note how diverse the audience was at that town hall. Now, I was watching. Women from various backgrounds came together to hear what Trump had to say. And that's really, really important that he's drawing in all kinds of different demographics across the female spectrum, right? Trump had a lot to say, proving that his appeal transcends traditional party lines. This is the beauty of this wrecking ball of a politician, this guy, this wonderful man, okay? He's able to connect with women who may have previously felt ignored by both parties, creating a coalition, creating this tent that's as strong as it is diverse. This is a significant shift, folks, in this political landscape, showcasing that Trump is a candidate who actually listens, right? Two of these, one of these. The atmosphere at that town hall, it was electric. It proved that Trump can galvanize support from diverse groups. Women of all ages were inspired by the vision for how he spoke about the future, reinforcing the idea that Republican values resonate across demographics. His ability to articulate a message of strength and resilience not only empowers women, but it also aligns perfectly with the traditional values many hold so dear. It's clear. It's clear to me. It's clear to those who attended. And I think it's clear to those who watched that women hear the facts and understand the impact of policies. They often lean toward a Republican agenda if they're doing that. Let's not also overlook the media's reaction, folks. This is really important because, you know, I have a thing about this media because we don't really actually have journalists anymore. We have Democratic activists. While they're quick to criticize Trump, they can't deny this. They can't deny the palpable energy in the room and the enthusiasm of the attendees. It's evident, so very evident, I'll say it again, that Trump's message is resonating. And as the election approaches, that kind of grassroots support can't be underestimated. Women are responding to a leader who stands up for their interests. And that is a very savage and powerful thing. Now, moving on to Kamala. Comrade Kamala. Kamala Harris's team, they're desperate, okay? They are panicked, they're nervous, and they don't know what to do. Why else would she agree to have a sit-down interview with a serious, actual journalist like Brett Baer on Fox News? I'm sure in their minds, when they thought about doing this, that it was for them perhaps an opportunity to connect with those women voters and possibly be seen by independents, right? They know that a lot of independents actually watch Fox News because they're nervous and they realize that they're losing this. So you got to imagine what the actual polling is in the interior of that campaign and how nervous they actually are, that she would appear and sit in front of Brett Baer, but she failed miserably in that interview. Now, again, contrast and comparison, savages. Listen to this and I'll I'll comment afterwards. Just listen to this.
More than 70% of people tell the country is on the wrong track. They say the country is on the wrong track. If it's on the wrong track, that track follows 3.5 years of you being vice president and President Biden being president. That is what they're saying, 79% of them. Why are they saying that? If you're turning the page, you've been in office for 3.5 years.
And Donald Trump has been running for office.
But you've been the person holding the office.
Come on.
Madam
Vice
President.
You and I both know what I'm talking about. You and I both know what I'm talking about.
I actually don't. What are you talking about?
What I'm talking about is that over the last decade, people have become. But listen, over the last decade, it is clear to me, and certainly the Republicans who are on stage with me, the former chief of staff to the president, Donald Trump, former defense secretaries, national security advisor, and his vice president, one that he is unfit to serve, that he is unstable, that he is dangerous, and that people are exhausted with someone who professes to be a leader who spends full time demeaning and engaging in personal grievances and it being about him instead of the American people. People are tired of that.
If that's the case, why is half the country supporting him? Why is he beating you in a lot of swing states? Why, if he's as bad as you say, that half of this country is now supporting this person who could be the 47th president of the United States? Why is that happening?
This is an election for president of the United States. It's not supposed to be easy.
Now, if you didn't hear the question before, it was something about this was a reaction to the Biden-Harris reaction to migrant crimes as referred to and asked by Brett Baer. What I picked up on there, besides her annoyance to Brett to referring back to the border crisis and the loss of life to those young women, and to so many others that have been attacked by illegal aliens in this country, is that she didn't really have an answer back. Not really have. She absolutely did not have an answer back with a, you know, to answer. So here's what I'm going to do differently going forward, right? She didn't have an answer for that. It was a push to demonize Donald Trump with an almost obsession, right? She seemed obsessed. She kept referring back to him throughout the entire interview, referring back to Donald Trump, trying to smear him, which was a fool's attempt, I think, on Fox News. It was a bad, really bad viral moment, and it was risky. And I think they lost out in that decision. Contrasts and comparisons. And in contrast, Kamala Harris, in a risky and now poor decision on behalf of her advising team, interviewed with Brett Baer and Fox. And that was, I think, in retrospect, they probably wished that they hadn't done it. Now, I think it's known that whenever they decided with Kamala to give her the microphone, I think it's known now that it's risky. But I want to say it's also detrimental. But at this point, what other choice do they have? I mean, they can't this late in the stage in her run. What else can they do? She can't run a basement candidacy while the Don is running all over the place, in contrast, doing any and every podcast, every town hall, rally, and TV interview he can muster within a 24-hour period, along with his very brilliant, very sharp and savvy VP pick, J.D. Vance, eating Democrat journalists alive at his every interview, right? She cannot. They cannot afford to hide her in the basement. So she had to come out, and now she's desperate. But I digress. Kamala Harris's interview with Brett Baer was a disaster and exposed her glaring incompetence and inability to handle even the most basic policy questions. Okay, she should be able to answer these questions at this point, having had a 3.5-year run under Joe Biden, right? She shouldn't need a script at this point. From the start, she was defensive, she was evasive, and completely unprepared, as usual, to justify the disastrous policies of the Biden administration. When pressed on inflation, when pressed on border security and the foreign policy, Harris stumbled through half-baked responses, proving once again that she lacks the depth and the understanding required for this position that she's running for, the most powerful position in the world. Republicans have long criticized Harris for her absence in leadership, and this interview was the smoking gun, showing just how incapable she is of articulating a clear, coherent vision for the country. The real embarrassment, however, came when Bear asked about the border crisis and Harris was infamously put in charge of fixing the issue, right? She was deemed the border czar, offering nothing but the same tired talking points, ignoring the reality of the chaos at our southern border. Her complete inability to address the real-world consequences of open border policies was appalling. And it's no wonder the Democrats themselves are starting to distance themselves from her. Now, this is a campaign that's raised $1 billion. $1 billion. What a waste. What a waste on an undeserving candidate. This interview wasn't just a bad performance. It was a full-blown catastrophe that confirmed what Republicans have said all along, what your savage girl CeCe has been saying all along, that Kamala Harris is unqualified, ineffective, and dangerously out of her league, okay? In the final stretch of the presidential election, it's almost comical watching Kamala Harris and Tim Walz struggle to connect with the voters. They're out there flailing about, trying to convince Americans that their progressive agenda is the answer to our problems, and it's not. But let's be honest, Americans are tired of empty promises and radical policies that just don't resonate. Their attempts to sell a package of higher taxes, more government control, and questionable foreign policy are falling flat. And it's not hard to see why, okay? People are struggling. People who punch clocks, who have kids in school, right? They can't pay for gas and groceries, you know that. Meanwhile, Republicans are solidifying their message and rallying behind a clear, consistent platform. We're focusing on the issues that matter most to Americans: economic stability, border security, and public safety. Top three. While Harris and Walz are busy playing identity politics and pushing a woke agenda that alienates the very voters they actually need to vote them in, we're sticking to our guns, folks, literally and figuratively. It's refreshing to see a party that stands firm in its belief rather than bending to the whims of the latest Twitter trend. Now, let me tell you, folks, I got to just disclose this to you because I'm shooting at a park. And you got to see, I wish I could have a panoramic view, because very often when I get started in talking of this, I clear the whole park. It's just really awesome to see. But I get back to the show. What's even more laughable, however, is their resilience on celebrity endorsements and flashy campaigns instead of genuine grassroots support. The Harris-Walz team is practically begging for attention from A-listers, thinking that star power, celebrities, can mask their lack of substantive policies. Spoiler alert, it doesn't work that way. Americans aren't swayed. They're not swayed by glitzy events or social media posts. They want real world solutions from people who understand their struggles, which is why they're connected so much and they love and embrace J.D. Vance. And guess what? That's exactly what Donald Trump and his VP pick J.D. Vance are offering. And as the Harris-Walz team grapple with their declining approval ratings down in the toilet and internal party conflicts, it's clear that their base is losing faith. The fighting and the infighting between moderate and progressive factions within the Democratic Party is becoming more pronounced, making it harder for Harris and Walz to project a united front. Meanwhile, Republicans, along with more and more of the American people, are rallying together. And it's been really great to see, showcasing a sense of unity that their opponents can only dream of. Simple fact is, folks, savage truth is, people have just been pushed too far left for far too long. Okay? We can only stand it for so long. We're focused, we're energized, and we're ready to take action. Qualities that are desperately lacking in the Democrat camp. Let's not forget about the economy. And while Harris and Walz are pushing for policies that would drive inflation even higher, Republicans are advocating for fiscal responsibility and smart economic growth. It's no surprise that voters are increasingly skeptical of Democrats and their ability to manage the economy. They're watching their bank accounts dwindle while the Harris-Walz duo spins their wheels, and it's clear who will be held accountable at the ballot box. In this pivotal moment, the contrast couldn't be starker. While Kamala Harris and Tim Walz flounder, stuck in a quagmire of their own making, Republicans are poised to capitalize on their missteps. We're not just hoping for a victory, we're prepared to lead. So as they continue to stumble on their own rhetoric, let's remember, the real battle is about effective leadership. It's a battle, folks, that we intend to win. Ultimately, the narrative is shifting. Voters are starting to see through the facade of Harris's leadership and they're gravitating toward Trump's confident, direct approach. That's what they're getting used to. That's what they're becoming accustomed to. It's actually what they're starting to expect. The more Harris stumbles, the clearer it becomes that the Democrats are facing an uphill battle. And with Trump continuing to gain support, the momentum is clearly on our side. Winning! But we haven't won yet. So vote. Vote early and take as many people with you. And remember to please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And as always, I say the same thing. Be bold, be strong, be faithful, be true. Till next time, I'm Cicely.
The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis is a production of Front Page Magazine and the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Reproduction of this podcast without express written consent is prohibited.